Thank you, Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, September 25th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The Harare province of the Movement for Democratic Change, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, has nominated its leader and three other top officials for national posts ahead of the party's elective congress next month.
This is democracy at work. That is the world essence of the MPC. So where there is a democratic process and people vote, I accept what comes out of the democratic process. The only problem is that I was not there.
South African Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba says his department is ready to roll out the new Zimbabwean special project designed to regularize their status in the country.
We, along with our application processing partner, the Visa Facilitation Services, have completed all the necessary preparations to process all prospective applicants and applications for the ZSP.
And the Minister of Health says, well, there are 1.3 million people living with HIV in Zimbabwe. Only 500,000 are under antiretroviral treatment. The Harare province of the Movement for Democratic Change, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, has nominated its leader and three other top officials for national posts ahead of the party's elective congress next month. The top four nominated yesterday are Tsvangirai and his deputy Tokozani Kupe, Chairman Love Momoyo and his deputy Morgan Komiche. The province also nominated current Organizing Secretary Nelson Chamisa to the post of Secretary General, with Porina Mpariwa Gwanyanya as his deputy. Douglas Mwonzora, who was nominated to the same post in an earlier disputed party process, was this time retained to his current position of National MDCT spokesman, with Tabita Kumalo as his deputy. Amos Chibaya was nominated for the post of Organizing Secretary, with current Deputy Organizing Secretary Abednego Bebe as his deputy. Mwonzora, who concedes defeat, says he feels disadvantaged because while he was away in Rusape, where he was being tried for a case of violence that happened in February 2011, others were given the opportunity to market themselves during the nomination process.
Well, I would say congratulations to the person who won. This is democracy at work. That is the world essence of the MDC is democracy. So where there is a democratic process and people vote, I accept what comes out of the democratic process. The only problem is that I was not there because I was facing charges. I was being tried in Rusape. So I was not able to stand for myself.
But some are saying people were not allowed to canvass for support.
That is not factually correct. In fact, the various candidates were asked to address the people, canvassing for support. They were asked to give their own achievements and so on, and they did that. And that means that if I had been present, I would have told the gathering also of the achievements that I've made, including my winning of the political party's finances case, in terms of which judgment our party gets money from the taxpayer every year. So it's one of the achievements that I did. But I am not a crybaby. I am not crying. There are 10 provinces that are going to be held. It's only unfortunate that every time we go to Congress, ZANU-PF invents some reason why I should be detained.
That was MDCT spokesman Douglas Mwonzora in Harare. But Organizing Secretary Nelson Chamisa disputes this claim, saying no one was ever allowed to canvass for support.
Well, let us distinguish between dissatisfaction and disgruntlement. You know, if he's dissatisfied, he should not then question the credibility and legitimacy of the process. This process was agreed upon collectively and unanimously by the leadership of the party. The dates were known beforehand. The venue was known beforehand. He then chose within his own circumstances to obviously come up with what he has come up with, and I don't know what is motivating him. The process was done by an independent electoral body who are not in the party, who are not in the leadership of the party. We have nothing to do with the party, but ultimately, it's a nomination. It's not as if it's an election. People then choose where they want you, so you don't choose where you want to be.
Musti Munzura is saying that he was disadvantaged because some of the people who were eventually nominated had time to canvass for support. Is this true?
Well, it's not true. It's incorrect. And I think as a lawyer, he should know that falsehood and telling things that are not near the truth is not in line with the ethics of the profession. Nobody was given the chance to campaign because it's not as if it's an election campaign. The campaign will only kickstart when we have completed all the provincial nominations by 2 weeks' time, I think, from now. As it is now, it's just a period of nominations. For you to be able to compete and to campaign, you must have been nominated by at least one province. As it is, Mr. Munzura has not been nominated for any position to do with being Secretary General.
That was MDCT Organizing Secretary Nelson Chamisa speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Meanwhile, a RUSAPE magistrate today postponed to October 2nd the case in which Munzura and 20 other MDCT members are accused of engaging in violence in 2011.
South African Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba says his department is ready to roll out the New Zimbabwean Special Project, or ZSP, designed to regularize their status in the country. Speaking today in Pretoria, Minister Gigaba said in South Africa is already to handle applications and implement the project for 245,000 permits holders of the previous program implemented in 2009. Gigaba said the department and the visa facilitation services have completed all necessary preparations to process prospective applications for the ZSP.
As we had announced, there will be 10 application centers for those applying for the ZSP. These will include 4 new centers in Midrand, in Gauteng, Cape Town, in the Western Cape, Polokwane in Limpopo, and Durban in KwaZulu-Natal. The remaining 6 centers are in George, Port Elizabeth, Kimberley, Bloemfontein, Nelspruit, and Rustenburg.
Gigaba said there will be 10 application centers and 120 staff members to deal directly with the ZSP permits. And as initially planned from October 1st, he said Zimbabweans must apply online before being called for interviews at application centers.
From the 1st of October, people can start applying online via the website and must not go to the VFS application centers. They will apply online via the website and then get an invitation for interviews, which will then be the time when they will be expected to present themselves at the application centers for interviews.
Applications for the ZSP will cost Zimbabweans 870 rands, which the Minister of Home Affairs says is in line with similar visas and permit charges. Minister Gigaba emphasized that the Department of Immigration will monitor all concerns about computer literacy and internet access, but added he's confident internet access for all those applying will be sufficient. He further noted that it will also be working with stakeholders to publicize and assist Zimbabweans on the application process.
To this end, the website will be up and running to allow this process to take place, to take off. And the website address to be used when lodging applications will be www.vfsglobal.com/ZSP/South Africa.
South African Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba speaking today in Pretoria.
The The Minister of Health says while there are 1.3 million people living with HIV in Zimbabwe, only 500,000 are under antiretroviral treatment. Addressing an HIV and human rights symposium called by the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights in Harare today, Health Ministry official Dr. Owen Mugurungi said his ministry was working hard to make sure everyone is covered. Dr. Mugurungi bemoaned the lack of funding, saying it was impacting negatively on the quality of health care. Addressing the same meeting, different lawyers called on the government to make sure every citizen has access to health care in line with the new constitution. They also urged government to respect the rights of sexual workers and gays, adding this will make the fight against HIV/AIDS easier. The meeting had that Ulawayo as the highest people infected with HIV. The meeting wraps up tomorrow. Studio 7 reached one of the attendees, AIDS and Arts Foundation Director Emmanuel Gasa, for more.
We are actually taking stock and taking action for an improved national HIV/AIDS response, because you actually find there are a lot of things that we have done properly as a nation, but there are also a lot of things that the law was not able to support our cause to get to the right natural response, because we actually had limited resources as a nation as far as we talk of HIV/AIDS programming in this country, particularly in issues to do with access to treatment issues in Zimbabwe, because there seem to be a lot of decline as far as funding is concerned pertaining to issues of health, necessarily HIV and AIDS. So we were actually gathered here with wonderful presentations that were coming from the our ministry official, who is the director of AIDS and TB unit in the Ministry of Health and Child Care, who was actually giving us an update on taking the pulse, which actually had an HIV/AIDS response in Zimbabwe that actually showed that the Bulawayo province right now is the one which is leading as far as HIV/AIDS infections are concerned.
Emmanuel Gasa is the executive director of the AIDS and Arts Foundation. He was speaking on the line from Harare.
Zimbabwe's medical professionals are gearing up for possibly another complicated task of separating conjoined twins who were born last week at Karanda Mission in Mount Darwin. In June, Zimbabwe celebrated the successful separation of Tapiwa Nashe and Kupakwashe Chitio of Murewa, who were joined at the liver and abdomen. One of the doctors involved, Paul Thistle, says doctors are consulting on how to separate the twins who share one male sex organ and have three legs. He says if the surgery can be done in Zimbabwe, they may take the twins. I beg your pardon. He says if the surgery cannot be done in Zimbabwe, they may take the twins to Canada, as they did with the twins Tinashe and Tinotenda Mufuka in 2005. Dr. Thistle says while he can't give specific details about the twins' health and status, he tells Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalele that they are doing well and their prospects are positive given medical advancement. He further says conjoined twins are a common feature in the world.
I think the incidence is 1 in 30,000 deliveries, but if you've been around long enough practicing obstetrics, you will come across this scenario on multiple occasions. For myself, this is the fourth time, and one set we were able to send to the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto, Canada. They were joined at the liver. That was 2004, and they were successfully separated in 2005, and now they are healthy boys growing up here in Zimbabwe. They're two unique individuals with their own misbehaviors, as boys do, and they're going to school healthy. There's no ongoing medical issues, and they're growing tall and fast like their father and their grandfather out in the village.
So what are the prospects for these particular twins? Are the prospects good in this case without going specific to their particular situation?
The feeling is that, yes, we could do something. We can put all our expertise together and work out a plan that will help these children. The details, yes, I cannot elaborate at this time.
Now, obviously, you are hopeful, having dealt with situations like this before, that a good outcome could actually come out of this.
Yes, we are optimistic. It's amazing what modern medicine can do. It's amazing how the parent can bounce back from a situation which could be very depressing, and it's a true miracle. We're not saying what the prognosis is. It is guarded, we call it in medical terms. It's uncertain with these boys, but with the, generally speaking, we've seen a success, and that's what we head for.
Dr. Paul Thistle is an obstetrician and gynecologist. He spoke with Ndimiake Mwakalele of Studio 7 from Karanda Mission Hospital.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kilohertz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
President Robert Mugabe today castigated Western-imposed sanctions against Harare at the United Nations General Assembly, calling them evil and diabolical. He called on the United Nations to condemn them, urging America and the European Union to immediately lift the measures. Sandra Nyaira has details.
Addressing the United Nations General Assembly, Mr. Mugabe once again castigated America and the European Union for allegedly using what he said were illegal sanctions as a policy tool to achieve short-term political objectives, in particular regime change.
Mr. President, regime change is a diabolical, illegal policy of interference in the domestic affairs of my country. And no good can come from undermining our economy or depriving our citizens of the necessities of life.
He said the sanctions are against the founding principles of the United Nations. The Zimbabwean leader urged the international community to condemn them as he called for the immediate and unconditional removal of the measures.
Why, I ask, should Zimbabweans continue to suffer under the American and European yoke of unjustified and unwarranted illegal sanctions? These evil sanctions violate the fundamental principles of the United Nations Charter.
He said Zimbabwe was a peaceful nation ready to engage in constructive dialogue for mutual beneficial relations.
Zimbabwe firmly believes that the United Nations should promote dialogue to achieve peace, the rule of law, and common understanding among states. Peace, security, stability, and welfare of Africa and our sub-region is vital for us. In Africa, the African Union is working tirelessly to push for peace in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, in South Sudan, in the Central African Republic, and in Somalia.
Mr. Mugabe said Zimbabwe was seriously concerned about the conflict in the Middle East.
We have witnessed the callous murder of women and children in shelters where they seek refuge from Israel's bombs. We have witnessed the brutal and random destruction of infrastructure in the Gaza Strip. And while these heinous acts were being perpetrated by Israel, the so-called civilized world maintained a deafening silence. And we ask why.
He also called for the expeditious reform of the Bretton Woods institutions, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank as the world discusses and starts implementing the post-2015 development agenda.
These reforms must reflect current realities and ensure the full voice and participation of developing countries in their decision-making and norm setting.
He also spoke about the Zimbabwe Agenda for Social and Economic Transformation, or ZIM-ASET, saying Zimbabwe had embarked on this program as part of the post-2015 development agenda. He lauded the land reform program for empowering the black majority people in the country. Mr. Mugabe was accompanied to New York by Ministers Simbarashe Mumbengegwi of Foreign Affairs and Sevia Kasukwere of Environment and other senior government officials, including his spokesman George Charamba and Mr. Mugabe's wife Grace. Reporting for VOA Studio 7 at the United Nations in New York, this is Sandra Nyaira.
Thanks, Sandra. At the same time, Zimbabwean leaders have been urged to implement some of the ideas being generated at the United Nations General Assembly in order to tackle challenges like climate change, which top state officials say is seriously affecting crop production. A member of the Zimbabwe United Nations Association, Ronald Mubaiwa, who's currently attending the UN General Assembly, says the fight against global warming is a wake-up call for leaders in the Southern African nation to spring to action in order to address dwindling crop yields. Mubaiwa tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube it's time for Zimbabwean politicians to deliver instead of attending such meetings for personal interests.
Before, politicians will just attend meetings and then go back home. They wait for another meeting without action being taken. But right now, it is a different situation because of the pressure. I think the information that is filtering to the civil society is information that is making people now demanding their politicians to be more accountable. So I think this time around, we are going to see a better action from the politicians.
Now, let's talk about specific issues you think that Zimbabwean leaders will take back home. What can they be?
One of the issues that I know for sure, it will be on climate change. They are going to work to increase their pace as far as, for example, carbon emissions are concerned. Then we also do have challenges on energy. We have perennial problems as far as energy is concerned. There are some meetings that the ministry has managed to do with partners, hoping that there will be the implementation aspect of it in the not-so-distant future.
That was Ronald Mubaiwa of the Zimbabwe United Nations Association speaking with Studio 7 from New York, United States of America. According to state officials, Zimbabwe expects to record a bumper harvest this year following years of low yields attributed to drought and shortages of agricultural inputs.
Meanwhile, United States President Barack Obama has vowed to take the war to the terrorist outfit called the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, or ISIS. Mr. Obama made the remarks Wednesday while addressing the UN General Assembly in New York. He also urged the international community to, quote, join him in an effort to degrade and ultimately destroy Islamic State militants. Mr. Obama highlighted efforts to build an international coalition to combat the group that has taken over large areas in Syria and Iraq. The U.S. leader also emphasized U.S. efforts in areas where he sees increasing momentum among allies containing Ebola, holding forth with sanctions on Russia while supporting efforts to maintain a ceasefire in eastern Ukraine and executing a broad international vision for combating climate change. Political analyst Ernest Mudzengi tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Mr. Obama's remarks show a world in turmoil.
Yeah, my take is that the bombing of ISIS is a pointer to the global crisis in which we are. We are in a crisis that is basically a crisis of intolerance and is the root cause of these problems, especially in the Middle East, is the intolerance to religions other than one's own. And in that heat of intolerance, some have taken it upon themselves to become extremists.
But do you think the strategy of bombing from the air without putting boots on the ground will work?
The issue of bombing from the air, I think the strategy also has to be complemented by ground forces, because merely bombing from the air is dangerous for many reasons. We are looking at casualties of innocent civilians. The air power can be complemented by ground forces. This is, however, not to say that war is the best way to deal with this crisis.
Political analyst Ernest Mudzengi of the Media Center speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Non-communicable diseases such as diabetes, heart disease, and cancer are receiving more attention in Zimbabwe and other developing countries as more and more people are beginning to be diagnosed with the diseases. The question now is whether there is enough information on these emerging diseases and how the health sector will continue to respond. For perspective, Tatenda Gumbo of Studio 7 spoke to Director of the Community Group on Health and Itai Rusike and Dr. Joshua Spanda, a medical doctor based in South Africa. Dr. Spanda says generally Zimbabweans are aware of the emergence of non-communicable diseases but may not have detailed information of the specific types.
With regards to other illnesses like high blood pressure, diabetes, and cancers, I do think that there still has got to be a lot of work that has to be done.
Mr. Rusike, what's your view?
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Banda. Generally, Zimbabweans have got information on most of the conditions. But the biggest challenge that the majority of Zimbabweans are facing at the moment is the cost of healthcare services. And if you look at the biggest challenge that we are facing right now is on non-communicable diseases. Cancers, you know, hypertension, the diabetes, and so forth. And if you look at most of the cancers, families in most cases, they end up, you know, selling most of their assets for them to access healthcare services. And some of the services, unfortunately, are not available in the country.
Dr. Sibanda, coming back to you and looking at what Mr. Rusike was talking about, some of these diseases that are being faced with Zimbabweans, what are some of the steps that people can take to begin to better understand how these diseases emerge?
To start with, I would like to think that these non-communicable diseases, for people to be conscientized about them, it's very important. So there has to be government-driven process to actually have outreaches and imbizos, so to speak. Conditions such as cancer of the cervix are caused by a virus that is incorporated into the female genital system early. And there are changes that do happen in the cervix that ultimately lead to the cancer. So medical science has advanced so much that medical personnel can actually screen the patient and pick up those changes that do imply that a patient is developing a cancer gradually. For example, a pap smear. Cancer of the prostate, also people need to be educated about simple symptoms of the fact that when a patient is more than 50 years of age, they need to go and get an examination.
Mr. Rusike, as Dr. Sibanda is pointing out, some of these screenings can be done very easily. But from your experience, are people accessing even these simple screenings, especially in the rural areas?
Yeah, I think we should also commend the government of Zimbabwe. Just last week, on the 15th of September, the Ministry of Health launched the HPV vaccine, which is the human papilloma vaccine. And this is a vaccine that is being used to prevent cervical cancer in young girls. And the response has been quite overwhelming, including to those other sectors that normally do not vaccinate or immunize their children.
Itai Rusike is the director of the Community Group on Health, and you also heard from Dr. Joshua Spanda, a medical doctor based in South Africa.
And remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts of the Women's Roundtable will be talking with listeners and experts about cancer.
And that's all we had for you tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.